What's up, peeps? Before you get into the episode, just a quick message. Did you know that Rebranded Safety is brought to you by RiskFluent? Rebranded Safety is essentially our campaign to achieve our purpose, which is to make the working world better by rebranding safety one interaction at a time. We value a people-centered approach that delivers positive impact on the risk. We deliver three types of services: technical, transformational, and fire. It's the last two I want to talk to you about. If you value what we value and you want some support driving a culture change or decluttering your safety systems, or you want to improve human performance, then it's our transformational support that can help you. Or maybe you want a highly experienced registered fire risk assessor to carry out an assessment on your building, design an emergency plan, or review the fire safety design for your new building, then it's our fire support service that can help you. But before you get in touch with us, it's important that you want to have impact on the actual risk and you value a people-centered approach. If you don't, that's fine. You'll find someone that can help you. But if you do value those, then get in touch with us at riskfluentltd.com or email me, james@riskfluentltd.com. But for now, I'll let you get into the episode.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today, we are talking all about communication. Let's jump into the intro and tell you some more about it. Let's go.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by RiskFluent.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button, bell, like, whatever. I'm looking a bit formal today. Apologise. Just been delivering some risk and culture leadership training today. Not long got back and had to bang out a few intros and outros to podcasts. So, you know, as it goes, busy. So apologies for not the normal relaxed Rebranding Safety attire. Rebranding Safety, if you didn't know, was brought to you by RiskFluent Limited. Hopefully you picked that up from the little intro thing we do. RiskFluent Limited has always been the company behind Rebranding Safety and still is, except now we are offering full-time consultancy services. Hence why I was out delivering risk and culture leadership training today, or it's probably workshops a better way to describe it. So if you are looking for some support on either what we would call the technical side of safety, so kind of normal health and safety, like how do we do risk assessment? Let's learn some more about COSH, or help us manage working at height, things like that. Or you would like some help on the more transformational side, like these people are not behaving correctly, or we don't like our culture, things like that. Then that's our transformational side, and we can help you out. There's loads of stuff that we can do, fire risk assessments all the way up to risk and culture leadership training. Whichever one you're after, give us a bell, we can help you. Give us a bell. Maybe we should do an advert like that. Also, we've moved everything from rebrandingsafety.com all the way over to riskfluentlimited.com. Emails, everything, all under the same brand now. Everything, Rebranding Safety still exists, still the same thing. So, but everything you need is on riskfluentlimited.com. So don't forget to go over there and check it out. All of our merch has gone over there. If you didn't know what we did with merch, you should go check it out. We've got safe, you know, when we sign out with the safe thing. So we've got like a fist with a safe on it, on t-shirts, jumpers, hoodies, high-vis and caps, tote bags and mugs, called our safe range. So go check that out. Go to Rebranding Safety. No, you don't. Go to riskfluentlimited.com. Hover over the Rebranding Safety bit. You'll see merch underneath there. You can click on that and off you go. And there's also some free downloads and stuff there, just our brain farts of stuff that we work with that you can download, have a read, and see if it helps you as well. So there's loads of stuff. Go check out riskfluentlimited.com. If you need some help, email me, james@riskfluentlimited.com, or just go to the website, press one of the buttons, and it will send us an email. Everything you need is in the description below. So today we are talking about communication. Communication is a massive part of what we do, yet I'm pretty sure it's probably one of the things we're the worst at. Just having a beer. I'm in holiday mode, going on holiday on Thursday. And I'm like, do you know what? I was going to calorie count today because I need to lose a bit of weight. And I was like, nah. Holiday mode, mate. Flying on Thursday. Get the beers in. Anyway, communication then. I was talking about communication today in that George Bernard Shaw said the biggest illusion with communication is that it took place in the first place or something like that. So, you know, we always think we've communicated and often we haven't. And when we had Ben, who you're going to talk to today, you're going to hear from today, way back, we first started planning this last year, mid to late last year. And we had the prep call and he was like, oh, we should talk about communication because there's loads of little like nuances to it. And I've worked all around the world and there's some interest for it. And I thought, oh yeah, this is cool. And I like this and this and that. And then there's also how the academics and the language that they use, how do we interpret that? And I thought, okay, this sounds interesting. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So let's get into the episode. I won't introduce Ben. He'll introduce himself. But one note before we jump into it, around the 18-minute mark, for those of you that are not watching this and you are listening to it, around the 18-minute mark, Ben talks about a story of his wife in the boardroom giving a hand gesture. And he shows the hand gestures to the camera, as I'm doing now. And the gesture is the V's. So, you know, like the up yours, the V's. For those of you listening, when he's talking about his wife doing a hand gesture that was deemed as inappropriate by the boardroom that she was in, he's talking about the V's. And I didn't clarify that he was talking about the V's. So hopefully that helps. I'll catch you on the other side. Enjoy the conversation with the amazing Benjamin Legg. Right. Ben, welcome to Rebranding Safety, mate.
It's been a while.
Yeah, how long have I was trying to work out actually this morning, like how long we've been trying to organize this.
It's been a while, but hey, you know, some of the best things in life are worth waiting for, aren't they? So yeah, we've got to start on a positive, haven't we?
Yeah, no pressure to our conversation now.
No, I'm a little bit different. You've got that really big water thing. I've just got this little one. So anyway.
Well, I got this to
try. I won't let it distract me too much.
I got this to try and make me drink more water through the day. And actually, it does. It's not bad. It actually helps me drink more. But when it is really effective, it is like today when I've got back-to-back Zoom calls, give or take. Yeah. I'm just like, yep, fill that up. That'll last me nearly all day.
Well, if nothing else, it's helping boost your biceps as well at the beginning of the session.
You need a lot more than this to boost the biceps. Yeah, stuff like that is probably the heaviest lifting, unless you can get a pint of beer that weighs the same. So that's about. That's about all I lift nowadays. Looking hard on the dad bod, Ben. That's what it is. Hard work, you know. You can't get a dad bod overnight. You got to work hard at it.
Yeah, I've spent 51 years developing mine.
Right, Ben. Would you want, in case people don't know who you are, do you want to give yourself a quick introduction?
Yeah, sure. I'm Ben or Benjamin Legg. If I was being naughty, my mum would call me Benjamin, so you can start off by calling me Ben. I'm currently located in Madrid, Spain, working as global head of safety for Ferrovial Group. And I wear two hats here, so I look after the global business, but also look after the construction arm of Ferrovial. Right. Worked internationally for maybe too long, but I think probably the best part of 20 years now. I've worked in different parts around the world, which maybe ties in with some of this that we'll talk about now in terms of language. I like to think I've learned a lot over those years and continue to do so even in this role now, being the only non-Spanish person in the management team. Has its highlights, let's put it like that. Being based in Madrid equally, you know, getting used to a different country, a different company, a different language, and assimilating all of it while contending with COVID. So, yeah, so being mainly in construction, grew up in east of London as a management trainee and working on site, and loved construction, that we get to create the most extraordinary infrastructure that enables people to go about their lives. And you can go around now and look at the buildings that I've been part of, and you get a real sense of pride. And I think, being able to work internationally in these different organisations like MACE and ACOM and Skanska, I've been able to grow, get to the positions that I am today. But along the way, I had the chance to work with extraordinary teams, like I say, doing amazing things in places that I didn't even know existed sometimes. I think that's where the highlights of construction and working in international businesses. So all good fun.
Nice. So if you're the only English speaking person, I'm assuming the whole boardroom doesn't speak English just for you. Do you speak Spanish then? Or do you force them all to speak English?
No, hablo español. So, it's an international business. So, in that group, they do speak English, and I was told that they spoke English in the board meetings, etc., before my arrival. I'll take that on face value, but sometimes I do feel that they do it just for me. So you don't feel guilty much.
Does it get to a point where like there's a tense conversation or someone gets really passionate and they slip over to their original language?
No, not in those senior leader meetings.
Oh, okay.
No, the guys, genuinely, the guys' comprehension in from an English language point of view is superb, and some speak more than one language, and I often kind of go home reflecting on that maybe because of where I grew up and English is my mother tongue, sometimes we can get a bit lazy around learning other languages, and I am trying to learn Spanish, so it's not business proficient, so it could become, I guess this is where we touch on some of the things about language, it could become dangerous where I could start using my sort of pidgin Spanish and we could get completely wrong context on something. Yeah. So we choose the language that we are all comfortable with to be able to ensure in a business context we're okay. Outside, I can fall over and make mistakes all day long. If I go to the supermarket, as long as I try. It's a sort of a never-ending, journey, really. But the guys, they accommodate me and we do our level best to do it. Mm. But as the chairman, Rafael Delfino, would say, we're an international business and we have a huge amount of work in the US. We have one of the biggest construction companies in Poland in Budimex. So this assumption that everyone's going to speak English is wrong, but for the most part they do.
Mm. I'm quite a big sci-fi fan. I like my Star Wars and stuff like that. And yeah, you find in a lot of sci-fi books or on films and stories, it's called basic, and the basic language that the universe speaks and is normally always English. I'm okay with it. Let's just call it basic. Maybe it's because I'm a sci-fi fan, but I'm kind of cool with that. As an organization, we talk, let's speak basic. Okay, cool. We speak basic. So we know it's English. Okay, cool. I really like calling it basic, but I imagine it would offend a lot of people as well.
And I think what I've learned wherever I've worked, just showing a little bit of appreciation of where you are, helps, and showing a little bit of respect to try equally works. Mm. But I think you made two interesting points there about basic. I think in terms of language, we can overcomplicate things for absolutely no reason whatsoever, other than our ego, maybe, or trying to look clever. But again, I think that creates problems for the audience that you're trying to communicate with. And then, from an English point of view, having spent the last sort of 3 years in a Spanish company, you know, Spanish is another global language. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in San Antonio, Texas, 85% of the people are Spanish speaking in US. So again, it's this understanding, I think, of, you know, this thing we call language.
Mm-hmm. And as well, French is quite international as a language, isn't it? There's a lot of, I know there's a large proportion of Canada that speak French,
I think. And I, but I, you know, I look at my daughter now, she's 9. She speaks English, Spanish, Turkish. And at her school, they asked if she would like to learn Mandarin at lunchtime.
Wow.
And I think if you can do English, Spanish and Mandarin, you know, you can go anywhere in the world.
Wow.
And be able to perhaps assimilate into society, I think. So, yeah, it's it's an incredible thing that we perhaps take for granted.
Yeah.
A little too much.
We thought we would talk about language for a reason, not just because obviously there are many different languages throughout the world, but actually because, and you kind of alluded to it there, like the message in which a lot of the time we're trying to communicate is quite important. Or if you were to even take, say, I quite like to use a combination of like Carsten Busch's work and Dave Snowden's work around like what culture is, that in our interactions are a massive part of defining or developing a culture over time. So language would obviously play a massive part of that. So I suppose it's worth just kind of maybe framing what we define as language first for like 10 minutes and then really get into it. Because I think when I say to people, when I do like risk and leadership kind of sessions with a leadership team and that, and we talk about culture and then say like, you know, your interactions over time will define the culture that you see in your organization. So every interaction you have, think about it. What is that voting towards? Is that voting towards the culture that you want to see? And I think everyone thinks about, okay, interactions mean me talking to Ben and Ben talking to me. But an interaction could also mean the language we use in our documentation or our videos, our body language. Like, there's so much to it. But like,
You know, and when we were talking about doing this, yeah, I just flicked up and just typed in language, and it said sets of symbols, sets of sounds and written symbols.
Oh, wow. So it's symbols, not letters.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, and if you think back of you know, languages in the inverted commas of other, groups of people that have existed on this planet, you know, we're trying to decipher that now. Because it's not language that we are familiar with.
Yeah.
But to those guys in that period of us being on this planet, it was perfectly normal.
Yeah.
Hieroglyphs, perfectly normal. But you don't see that used today, you know, going to the supermarket and seeing everything priced up in hieroglyphs. Yeah. We would think that was crazy, but it was normal.
Yeah. And it's interesting, actually, that it says symbols on there, because then you start getting into the world of semiotics and what people interpret out from a symbol, which is an interesting area for me to discuss, because there is a certain academic or consultant in Australia called Mr. Rob Long, who obviously is well known for being quite provocative and challenging. And I like quite a lot of his work. We've had him on the podcast, had a really nice chat with him. But he doesn't like the symbol that we use for this podcast. So every time we sign out on the podcast, I give a fist to the screen and I say safe. Now he defines that as brutalistic, and also I'm not sure they're different people, if I'm honest, but his kind of groupie that shares a load of the stuff, Dave on LinkedIn and stuff like that. He also has recently actually challenged me saying, "Oh, I still don't understand your logo." And I was like, "Well, okay, that's cool." Like, primarily that might be because you've never engaged in a conversation with me about it, just kind of attacked it. But let's pause that for a second. Let's just leave that there. It's interesting because
to me, it means something completely different to what he, to what it means to him. So to me, it's got a backstory. To me, it reminds me, it's quite nostalgic, is when I was a teenager, that's what we used to do. Like if something was cool, we would go, safe. And we would like fist bump, right? Yep. During COVID, the fist bump became the handshake. So yep. For me, the fist symbol symbolizes a fist bump, and it's actually a very positive symbol. To him, it's a symbol of aggression, of brutalism, of revolution, maybe. And I found that very, very interesting. And I kind of come to a point to be, and maybe it'd be good to get your opinion on it. Like, does it matter? Like, if it means something to me, but it means something different to somebody else, how do we deal with that? Like, that's really interesting, isn't it? Like,
yeah, and I get it, and I suppose from that context of being in different places, you start to appreciate different audience of what their backgrounds are, what they're used to, what's normal.
Mm.
So identifying that baseline for me of what's normal or what's accepted is incredibly important. So I understand your point of view, because I've seen it when I was in the US a lot of people, you know, fist bumping. So it does come down to your understanding of what someone is doing or how they are communicating or what language or symbols they're using to do that.
Yeah.
So I mean, from my point of view, what do I think about it? I always go back to understand the audience that you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Before, or maybe just doesn't mean you stop. I don't think you should stop. I think you should do what's right for you, because I wouldn't take offense of you doing that to me. Might be if we were stood in the same room and, you know, we're having a heated discussion and you went to do that, I would interpret that differently.
Yeah. Okay.
The language, the tone that you use, the positivity, because it might be that symbol, but if you say safe, you know, in a really positive tone, because I think tone comes into language as well, I would interpret it differently.
Yeah. Okay. There's a few things there. So first thing I wanted to touch on is that maybe I think there's kind of like a mini risk assessment to do when you're communicating something out. So when Rob fed that back passive aggressively through his blog, I read the blog and I kind of went away and I reflected on it and was like, okay, let's assume that there's a lot of people that agree with Rob. And let's assume there's also a lot of people that agree with my interpretation of the symbol.
Yeah.
You then have to essentially do a risk assessment to say, is this message that important that I'm willing to accept the risk of someone misinterpreting it or maybe not that important, e.g. So let's say if there was a big risk of misinterpretation, but this was me communicating some, say, like safety critical information, that risk wouldn't be acceptable. But because it's just a brand, it's not even a brand, it's like just a symbol representing Rebrand and Safety as a media outlet, it's not that much of a massive risk for me if it is interpreted wrong. So I can kind of take that risk assessment way of looking at it.
Yes, you can. And you know, again, I would look at it from the point of view of, well, maybe you need to clarify to your audience.
Maybe.
You know, sometimes a single symbol or a single word your audience is then down to interpreting it from their experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you want to, you know, you could expand on it and, you know, you could do that and say, keep safe, love you all. Completely different. But just adding love you all to it or something. But it's providing more context to the symbol that I guess you're using. And I can give you another example. And hopefully, you know, we're now in dangerous territory, maybe. And hopefully people won't complain to you. But I remember my wife is Turkish. And she sat in a meeting and she's discussing with an operations director, all of whom were British.
Right.
Okay. And this guy said to her, how many did you say? And she went, two. And he said, no, Izzy, no. And she said, what do you mean? She said, no, you can't do that. She said, why can't you do that? This means nothing to her.
Oh, wow.
But she's in a meeting full of British people. Exactly. So apologies. I'm now going to say what I said to you before. Apologies to anyone listening or watching or anything else that's offended by that. I don't mean to offend. I mean to clarify the context of how symbols and language can be interpreted through your experiences. Mm. It was only after they explained to her what it meant that she said, oh, I get it. And then returned the message to them saying, well, why do you still do that? It's really quite offensive to, you know, other people across the water to the UK.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't do it anymore. So, yeah, it's brilliant. But this is the point for me of why language is so critical if done properly.
There's also a bit in that, though, isn't there, like, of what you've said, like tone and context are important, and intent, I think, are important. Like if we're in this conversation and I went to you, oh, that happened twice, Ben. That happened twice, and that's it. Sorry, if you're listening to this audibly, I'm putting my fingers up the offensive way around, right? So my intent is not to offend you, clearly, from this conversation. Mm. So I would be like, I'm kind of also like, okay, yeah, fair enough. It might be helpful to somebody to go to your wife and just say, FYI, in Britain, this is the middle fit. This is the same as a middle finger, even though I don't think it is, but whatever. Some people find this offensive, right? Yeah. But there's also like intent, I think, is a massive part. Like, I think I'll touch on maybe swearing here as well. Like, you know, I swear. It's part of my language, part of my upbringing. A lot of people I've been around swear. To me, they're just fucking words. That's all they are. They're just ways to emphasize what we're trying to say. It's just part of my vocabulary. But I go, I did a keynote for a company the other day, and the lady, the head of safety, was just like, had a call with just of me. And she was like, look, I love your podcast, James, but FYI, like the comms team won't like the F's and B's and all of that. And I'm like, oh, fucking motherfucker. Like, that's like my whole brand.
but it comes back to this point about who you are. But I like that. I like what you're saying about the intent, because I think sometimes we lose that purpose or lose that intent because when we're coming back to language, we're using it to communicate or drive or show or tell or challenge. It's such a fundamental form of us as a species.
Yeah.
Whether it's a verbal or symbol or, you know, sign language. Mm. You know, all of these things, or even into the South African mines, where they created a language because there's so many multiple different language backgrounds, they created one language so people could communicate with each other. Mm. Yeah, it's part of our DNA to communicate. So who you are, I don't think should change. Understanding your location and your audience and, like you say, your intent on something, I think is that differentiator.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you bring up sign language. That's been popularized of late. I've always been kind of not surrounded by people that do sign language, but very aware of it, with my mum being deaf and me being hard of hearing. We don't speak sign language. Me and my wife have actually brought a course and we've done half of it and then forgot about it, if I'm honest. But I think it's something we would like to pick up, what we always say, but you know, start a business and have a kid. You ain't got time to learn a fucking language. I'm pretty sure I played rugby for a few games for, I had the privilege of playing for England Deaf. And in there we had a sign language interpreter because people in there were profoundly deaf and only spoke through sign language. And I remember talking to someone, and he was saying that, in some countries doing that is like a sign to say you're stupid, like, duh. So like, for audible people, like signing thank you is hand on chin and putting your hand flat, like a motion downwards, kind of like, oh, thank you. To me, that's always been thank you. And I actually quite love it. And sometimes I do it naturally. I'm like, oh, thank you. But it's apparently, I've never seen anyone or use it or whatever, but apparently in some countries that can be like, duh. And I'm like, fucking hell. And like, even now, just speaking my language, not my language, but if I was deaf, speaking my language of sign, I'm like, just doing that, someone's fucking offended. It's It's crazy. So I just think it's, I personally think intent is very, very important in language. I think understanding their intent, like if you sat in a call with me and you said the F word, the C word, whatever, like, for me, it's intent. If you were like, oh, fucking hell, it's hot here, I'd be like, I'm not offended. But if you went, you fucking twat, James, that's completely different. And that's like...
Well, but even then, if it was your mate and you were down the pub... Well, and
that's just how we greet each other.
Actually, thought it was maybe being in jest. If it was a completely different environment, this is where I think environments are important as well, you would interpret that differently.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's an interesting point that you make. So being in Spain and not demanding everyone to speak English all the time, I want to immerse myself in my colleagues speaking Spanish. And when they do presentations and I am the only one and it's a project team that we're doing a review with, I say to them, please speak Spanish. Yeah. If you put the slides up, I can understand, to your point, the intent of what they're saying because I'm seeing images of what they're talking about. And because of my experience, again, I can put that into a context of understanding. Yeah. Is it going to be a perfect understanding? No. But will I understand their intent? Yes.
Yeah.
Without being fluent in language, the verbal language, I guess.
You also then had the added complication, which you would have experienced in like some languages not having words that you're used to using or words meaning different things. So a really simple example, I watched a documentary that was, I think it was... Ooh, I'm going to get the language wrong. I think it was Spanish made. I might be wrong. But I remember listening to a podcast about this documentary I watched about cycling. And I remember that one of the guys, they were kind of reviewing it. They were reviewing that thing. And he said, oh, no, this is really simple and it's really pedantic. He said, but it just really annoyed me. He said, in racing, you have a leaderboard. You don't have a scoreboard. Because you don't have scores, you just have leaders. But there wasn't in the interpretation. So let's say it was Spanish. The documentary was wrote in Spanish and said in Spanish. And then when you change the language over, it changed it to scoreboard because that's what they were saying. So you change it like for like, and it was scoreboard, not leaderboard. And he was like, "I know it's really silly, but that really annoyed me." And I was like, "Ooh, that's interesting. That's really interesting."
And I have it, and I've had it in my time so far in Spain, where in the beginning, where some of the guys were trying to speak in English and have a conversation with me, you know, a couple of the guys that I'm quite close to in here, I'd say to them, did they really mean it like that? What, are you offended? I said, yeah. It felt like really rude and abrupt. You're back to your point about intent. It was just they were using the vocabulary or the words that they knew.
Yeah.
And they've put them into a sentence to try and describe something to me or say something to me, which I've then interpreted, understood it, but the way it came across, I was a bit like, really?
Yeah.
But I'm sure that happens with me as well when I'm then trying to speak Spanglish to them.
I find it fascinating, if I'm honest. I remember reading a book by Carsten Busch, and I'm going to piss people off here by getting languages wrong, but I think he's from the Netherlands, and I'm not really sure what language that is. I'm really showing how uncultured I am now, aren't I? Dutch, right, okay. So do you know what? He wrote the book in a language, in his language. Let's just say that so I don't piss him off or anyone else off. So he wrote the book in essentially, but it's in English. So I read the book and it's in English. I don't know whether he wrote in English or whether he wrote it and it was translated or what, but essentially the book is in English. And I was speaking to a few people and they were like, I didn't really like the book. It felt a bit aggressive. It felt a bit blunt. And I just think it would have been helpful to have some more kind of advice and stuff in there. I just felt a bit kind of angry. And I was like, I didn't really get the vibe of that book. Now, this context when that I interpreted it different, because I have engaged with Carson quite a lot.
Yeah.
I'm in a WhatsApp group with him. I talk to him quite a lot on social media, email. I've been in loads and loads of calls with him. And I'm also a bit of a super fan. So there's a bias there as well, in that pretty much anything that he writes, I'm just going to lap up because I think he's amazing. It's full of sci-fi and pop culture references as well, which I love. So I'm like, it's kind of like, no matter what he said, I was going to interpret it in a positive light anyway. But if you come from a completely unbiased point, you read it for what it is. And then I was talking to another friend of mine who also knows Carson quite well. And I was saying, I was really surprised that this person had said this about the book. And he said, but sometimes the language translation or like the culture translation into our culture translation can be interpreted as quite abrupt and aggressive from English culture interpreting their culture or their mannerisms. Maybe that came across in the book as well. And I was like, you know what? I didn't pick that up at all. But there was an interesting observation as well that essentially maybe the mannerisms of a culture converting into the mannerisms of a British culture then even might have potentially found its way into a book for written word, which I thought was phenomenal.
I hadn't really ever thought about that, but I how it could translate into the written word, how we are as a society and the way we converse. I quite often find myself here looking at some of the words that I then understand in English and think, wow, it sounds so much better in Spanish.
It's got to be, English has got to be the least beautiful language, in my opinion.
I mean, there's a few I've come across, I'm like, really? but I hadn't really thought about how that country culture or that country background or how they communicate verbally translates into a written language.
It's fascinating. Because it was interesting. The reason I started the podcast is because I'm borderline illiterate anyway. So for me to write something would just be a nightmare. But my wife always says, when I write things, she said, like, it's probably a little bit better now, I hope. But like, she said, you write how you speak. She said, you literally write how you speak. Like, you speak quite fast and it's full of stories. And she's like, and when you write something, you write in exactly the same way as you speak. Whereas a lot of other people won't. They'll speak in one way and then they'll write in a different manner. Whereas for me, there's no difference. Like, I write in that manner, which is really interesting, which is obviously why we thought, well, let's stop writing and let's just do a podcast so I can just speak like I speak and not worry about how I write.
Because isn't that more inclusive? You know, I know, you know, what you said about being deaf or illiterate, but there's certain things that you can use language in different forms to be more inclusive and more, I think, heighten the level of communication about something.
Mm.
You said two words earlier that make me, you know, want to recoil a lot in my world and our world of health and safety: risk assessment. When you think about what you're saying there, and Shay saying, you write what you say. Sometimes I think we end up writing stuff and using absolutely unnecessary levels of vocabulary.
Yeah.
For whatever personal reason that is.
Yeah.
But it excludes people.
Yeah.
And I think causes confusion. Yeah. I mean, hats off to people that have got a wide range of vocabulary. I don't. And, you know, like I say, hats off to people that have. But when we get into wanting to communicate important things, I think sometimes, you know, the use of simple, basic language is far better than overcomplicated, verbose. Yeah, it's a word I remember from a guy that I used to think spoke absolute nonsense. But, you know, language that we just don't use in everyday life. Mm. I don't cross the road with my kids and say, right, we're going to do a risk assessment now and let's do a JHA. And just I say, OK, guys, we're going to cross the road. How are we going to do it?
Mm.
9-year-old repeats back to me, well, we're going to check if there's any cars coming. And why is that? Because they'll hit us. Yeah, so writing that down into a risk assessment why not? Why do we find ourselves intent in, when we get into the written word, of using language, and I have a particular hang up about this in LinkedIn, as you know, of excluding a huge audience just because of what? I don't understand it. You know, I think it detracts from intent sometimes.
This is quite interesting, actually, because I can kind of come at this from a different perspective of like starting the consultancy full time in January. We kind of went out with the language that I would prefer to use. So there's a lot of existing language within safety, similar to what you were saying there, that just make me want to vom. Like, I'm just like, ugh. You know, and even the words health and safety make me go, ugh. Like, that's my job, right? So I was like, I really would like to see, at the moment, might change in the future, but I think that I would like to see our roles come under, or maybe not our roles, but like the term health and safety to come under the wider term of operational risks. So,
yeah.
So for me, I really like that notion.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into the pros and cons and risks and pros of whatever of that. That's for another conversation. But just to pause there, like I quite like that. So I was like, that's what the company is. And to say the company is an operational risk consultant. Okay, cool. Now I try marketing that to small, medium-sized enterprise to get some business. I ain't getting fuck all because they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
No.
So then we come over to know your audience, right?
Because
I'm having to use words that I might not necessarily agree with, and just for the sake of getting in the conversation, because I can change the language gradually over time. But if I don't get that time, that relationship with them, I can't have those interactions to drive the change. So if I have somebody ring me up and they're like, oh, James, really love behavior-based safety, we want to get you in, even though the term behavior-based safety is not what I would move forward with. But I'm like, I don't give a shit if they call it BBS or HOP or New View or differently or just anything. I couldn't give a shit what they call it. I want to get in. I want to drive some positive change.
Yeah.
I know one particular person, I know a few people that will disagree with that and say, you know, words define the interaction sometimes.
I mean, it's quite tricky because I do think that words do describe something. You know, you conjure up an image in your head or an understanding by the words that people use. And again, experience defines how people will interpret that. Yeah. So, you know, you said, you know, BBS or HOP or whatever. My interpretation of all of that stuff will be different to you, will be different to, you know, other people that we know.
Yeah.
Because it's based on their experience and their understanding. Mm. But I get the point that sometimes you have to use certain language or certain ways of communicating to be able to get in the door to have that conversation. Yeah. And I don't think that's a negative, but I think that does come back to this point again about understanding the group that you are going to converse with or you're going to engage with.
Yeah.
You know, and if 6% of UK construction industry is illiterate, why we persevere with language, which I find slightly odd in my position. Mm. Why do we keep doing it and wondering why we don't get different results?
Mm.
Who are we doing it for?
Mm.
Are we doing it to satisfy egos and try to appear to be, you know, the height of academia, which, frankly, when it gets into business, I don't have a lot of time for? Or are we really trying to find out how to do something or how to engage with somebody properly?
Mm. Yeah. I find the relationship between academia and practitioners a challenging but interesting one. I think firstly, we need to understand what our role as practitioners are within academia and what academia's role is within academia, right? Or let's say each of those roles, practitioner and academia, within improvement and innovation. So That's what we're trying to do, is that they come up, they do tests and they come up with ideas. And I think our role as practitioners is to not pick a side. And I don't want to come away from language here. So I'm going to bring this round to a point, but our role is to take what they say and try it. And then take what someone else says and try it. The problem we have there is that academia speaks in a language in which I have to Google every other fucking word to work out what they're talking about, then it's not helpful, right? And it takes me, everyone's like, oh, I can just read this paper and you can understand the existential capacity leverage divides of it. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you on about? Like, I have no idea what you're on about. And it becomes really difficult then. And I was talking to somebody the other day who said, James, why don't you write a book? And I was like, because it would take me like 10 years to write a book. I'm like illiterate. And he was like, well, I think you should write a book. Like I said, if there's only one reason I would write a book, because there's one thing the world doesn't need more of, safety books. We've got enough. If I was going to do it, I'd do it because I'd probably write the only safety book that's got swearing and a really common language in it.
Or maybe that a greater population would understand it.
Oof, I don't know about that.
Great. And I'm going to have to stand corrected by our audience, and hopefully they'll contribute and tell me you're completely wrong, Ben. But I remember back in my Mace days, we did a piece of work. I was asked to do a piece of work about communication. And I came across this in Microsoft Word. There's this rating in Flesh Kincaid, I think, with two guys from the US Navy, which created a way of working out how easily understandable a document is by the words that are used. Because obviously in a naval situation, you don't want people to have any ambiguity about what they want me to do. Yeah. You could put a document, a Word document, into this system. I don't know if it still exists. I'm going to have a look after this. And it would tell you how easy or difficult it would be for the average person to understand it. Wow. I put our health and safety policy into it, and it sort of came out as Microsoft Word operating manual level. And you're kind of like, and we wonder why people don't really engage with this. So, most of one side, because I had a lot of fun there. But no, I don't think any other health and safety documentation is probably any different. How easily understood is the language that we're using for the audience that we've got?
And it makes it really difficult here, because like if we were to take an example like investigation, right? I completely agree with the notion that incident investigation communicates the wrong ethos. It sounds like, or at least maybe it sounds like that because of how we've done it in the past, regardless of why it sounds like, but it often is interpreted to that we're investigating to find someone who's at fault, because that's what the police service do and that's what the HSE do and so on and so forth.
But isn't that where when you were younger and you're probably watching The Bill or something?
Yeah.
Perhaps our international guests, but you're watching some police program or something. They talk about investigations, so your understanding of the word investigation is formed long before you've got into health and safety.
Yeah, exactly. So if we were to try to move away from the word investigation, I'm all for it, right? Yeah. Because I think it communicates the wrong message. We're not out looking for somebody to blame. What we're out looking for is what we can learn from this to improve, right? Okay, cool. So we'll go with the very now popular term of like event learning or learning team or something like that. So I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone yesterday with a client who's had an incident, and I'm like, that's cool. We'll just do an event learning process. And they're like, a what? And I'm like, investigation. Because I've just like, I haven't got time to sit here and explain what I mean. But I would just use the word investigation, and then I'll just make sure that our actions and the work that we deliver isn't to the manner of trying to find someone to blame. So like, why the reason I'm saying this is because I want to make it important that like we're navigating in a really messy space here. Like this is not easy. There is no one way to say anything, I don't think.
No, and you can say, like you said earlier, you can say the same thing in different tones and mean different things.
Yeah.
And again, living and working in multi-language environments, my wife says to me sometimes, why do you Brits say that? We don't, you have the same word for about four different meanings.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I never really thought about it like that. But I wanted to sort of, you said a word just now, actions, that made me think about, the environment that I was in the Middle East with huge number of different languages, different cultures, different backgrounds. And what we found there was that they created this sort of visual impact training.
Right.
It was acted. It was, there were no words. It was acting out scenarios, which I think maybe, in our did long distant past, a lot of how we talk, people say people talk with their hands, don't they? The fact that there are no words and people were using acting of scenarios, it didn't matter where you were from. It bypassed interpretation. It bypassed your experiences because you could see it, you could visualize it, and your brain was understanding what was happening in front of you. It's truly international.
Yeah.
And I think, some of the most enlightening times that I had were there, where in that experience of all these different people from multiple different places with different literacies, different education, et cetera, et cetera. But this bypassed everything, absolutely everything, because it was acting, it was visual, but it was still a language to me because of what was being described.
It's interesting that I've started to hear and have more conversations around let's try and break into some of the more creative spaces to work out how we can communicate our messages. I'd say they're very much in the minority, the people that are having these conversations. But ultimately, I understand for many people, it's a scary space as well, because they've always seen safety and risk management as a very formal process. And ultimately, our language and the mannerisms within safety is also very formal. So if we were to say, why don't we make a cartoon of the health and safety policy? What? No, why don't we turn it into a poem? Why don't we make a video out of it, an animation? Okay, yeah, I'll go with an animation. We'd like a serious animation. Now let's make it fun. I get why people feel like there's a natural aversion to it. Why are we not talking to artists? Like read this and turn it into an image.
I don't understand why not. And I know there's I think it's Origin Energy, I think in Australia, I could be wrong, but I saw their health and safety policy and it was more visual.
Yeah, Queensland Utility did it, I know that.
Okay, so but then there's multiple examples, and again, I think this is sometimes where what is stopping us? What actually is this fear? Because IKEA can't be wrong, because probably everyone on this call has got something from IKEA and probably had the pictures to put it together wrong. Yeah, it's all visuals. You get on an aeroplane to understand the emergency arrangements, it's visuals. We're surrounded by visuals, but for whatever reason, we end up with a written word in the world of health and safety unnecessarily.
Yeah.
I think, again, this was a thing that we did. It was called Build Safe UAE, and there's some big global names that are behind that. And we worked with a company called Gincom in South Africa, and everything that we did was visuals. Mm. We turned everything into visuals, method statements about how to lay bricks. It's transversal. It bypasses where you're from or anything else, because most people can understand a picture.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm biased because I think visually I'm not a written word person.
But I think the one of the issues, and I think the important thing to as well pull out of this is that it isn't one or the other. because there are people out there that really like to read lengthy, to me it sounds like horrific, but lengthy documentation, and they like that, and they are, you know, learners by reading. There are learners by conversation and audible learning and visual learning and kinetic learning. But in safety, we just seem to do one, right? We're just like, yep, just write it down and get it done. And I when I was head of safety at the GGF, I actually run a panel for our members and had the HSC there. And I said, I'd like to ask you kind of like a really simple closed question. Would the HSC have a problem if you communicated a risk assessment by video? And they said, no. As long as it's effective, we don't really give a shit how you do it.
No.
So there you go, people. Now you can expand that. I'm not saying don't write it down, because some people would like to print out and have a look at it, make some notes on it maybe or whatever. But I'm saying some people out there who like to learn by watching videos, why not make a little 3-minute video about the risks and the mitigations of the tasks that they're about to do?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
We're doing a project. We're planning a project with a client right now, and we're collaborating with a tech company around getting their shop floor staff. So they work in like a really dynamic environment, to getting their kind of coalface staff conversing the risk assessment. And we've collaborated with a tech company that can record that and turn that into a risk assessment. So all the shop floor are doing is having a conversation.
Yeah.
Conversation is led by a couple of questions, but we're going in, we're starting off with just redefining risk and health and safety in their head first, so they understand a bit of a better understanding of it. So, but basically we're trying to move them away from the idea that safety is just paperwork. So move them away for that first, and then just get them do a couple of workshops, get them used to talking risk management and risk assessment and hazard identification, just talking about it in a group, and then introducing the tech, getting on the shop floor and doing it and doing it and doing it. And when I got the phone call saying, oh, James, I've got this idea and I'm thinking you would be really good to help us with it, mate, I was like, couldn't have asked for a better project. That is an awesome project.
So, and funnily enough, we've just done a pilot in the US with a company called Field. And that is about the guys in the field are actually recording with their phones.
Yeah.
What they're going to do and how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because when you think about it, why are we intent on having these, you know, checklist tick and flick things that people don't use? Was it, you know, going back to our primeval perhaps position as a species, we talked. Drawings and we talked. You know, so I think you're right. I don't think that, like you say, there's no one right answer. I think it is an amalgamation of everything. But at the same time, maybe we've forgotten some of the language that could get us better results.
Yeah.
Or forms of language.
I don't understand why companies don't have more podcasts, if I'm honest.
That's a good point. I don't know. We have a lot of blogs, but again, back to the point of you and I perhaps not being the kind of people that want to sit and read a lot of things. We perhaps prefer to listen. I would prefer to listen. We're still intent on creating the written language.
Yeah. I was working with a company a while back, and a lot of their people that were doing work, a lot of their employees drove vans nearly all day and every day. And I said, how do you communicate with the lads on the coal face, the lads and ladies on the coal face? They said, oh, we send out these comms on email. I said, right. Do they have any time in the day to check emails? Well, they start at 6 and they finish at 4. And what are they doing all day? Working, right? And then you're complaining that they're not reading their emails. Like, why don't you put it into an audible podcast? There's tech out there that you can have on your phone that you can make it private, so it's not public if you wanted to. So you can have it on your phone, get Bluetooth in the vans, and they can listen to it whilst they're driving between jobs. And then there's your comms out. Or you want your CEO to start talking to your staff more? Do a fucking podcast. I would caveat it and be like, try to be authentic when you do it. Like, try not to sound like you're reading from a fucking script. Like most of these big corporate podcasts do end up being like, hello, I am James, the CEO of McPherson Aggregates, for example. And today, and it's just like, oh my God, that's not the CEO. That's the comms team script that you've given to the CEO. So there's a fine line between doing it and doing it well. But you know, I just cannot understand why big companies that have millions and thousands or whatever people to communicate to are not making more short video content and more podcasts.
Because and maybe I'm going to make a broad brush statement here, but because it's this evolution of businesses and the people who are in charge of making certain decisions, they will base them on their experiences of perhaps what they are conditioned to. You know, if you're an academic, maybe they'll be more inclined to do a lot of the written stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're more you or me, you're much more communicative verbally. You use a lot more of a verbal language.
Yeah.
If you're a creative person, you're probably going to be more inclined to do posters and sketches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to, if you looked at big business, most of the people probably get to the most senior positions of deciding how a company operates and communicates are probably from an educated academic background.
Yeah.
It's not to say it's wrong. It's just their experience again, I think, before, with what demands that. If you look at perhaps a lot of startups, maybe they're much more around podcasts because it's a younger generation who communicate in a much different way. You know, I've seen my son in a room with his mates and they're WhatsApping each other.
Yeah,
you know, 15 of them in a room.
I mean why are we not WhatsApping? I mean, why are we not just utilizing technology to make it easier? I think I've seen people literally run a company in Teams, which I quite like. Not a massive Teams fan, but it seemed to work really well. You know, you've had everything you need in that team with your documents, and you could also have a quick phone call on there. I was like, this is a really good idea. But I'm kind of like, we try to force employees to the place where we want them to be to communicate with each other. And then this is kind of important because you said about environment earlier, like, and I think that applies to tech as well. Like, if you're pulling people away from the place where they already are, and then you wonder why they're not turning up. Like, and I had this when I was at Future Leaders at IOSH. Like, they have the IOSH Future Leaders forum.
Yeah.
And we were the advisory panel before it became millions of people. Like, we were an actual advisory panel when I was on it. That was like 8 of us. And we all pretty much said, move away from the forum. The forum. It was an online forum. And so, we've only just done the forum. Okay, fair enough. I get that you've just put money into it and now you don't want to move away from it. But we were like, just go over to LinkedIn. But why? Because people are already on LinkedIn. Like, I'm being selfish. I tell you now, I'm never going to go on the forum. Why? Because I haven't got time. I'm on LinkedIn anyway. So if you go where I am, then I'll engage. Yeah. So if that's the case with me and I'm one of your members, it'll be the same for a lot of other people. The majority of safety professionals are talking to each other on LinkedIn. So if that is where your audience is, then go there. Like, so... And I think when we think about our employees, and I know there's a fine line between trying to control the comms and data security. I understand that. We've got a lot of worlds to try and balance here. But if we can try and tweak the, not just the language, but the way that we communicate the language, the manner in which we communicate it, and the tech or the place in which we do it, we might fucking get a lot better if we design all that stuff on a bit of a people-centered approach instead of just a here's the comms, put it out.
Yeah. Well, and look, you made a great, when you said WhatsApp, it reminded me of a gentleman that you and I both know, Prakash, who won an award last night, incidentally.
Congratulations, Prakash.
yeah, fantastic news there.
And but, you know, I tech off of WhatsApp, hasn't it? Like it looks very.
We were ACOM together, and you know, I was sitting there and we were sort of knocking a few things about, and he said to me, just flippantly, why do we communicate in a different way to how the guys communicate outside work? Yeah. And that's where this whole sort of idea of an ACOM virtual assistant came from, of people being able to use a format mm-hmm. that they are comfortable with
mm-hmm.
to record information that we need,
yeah.
or they need. So, yeah.
Flexibility. Right. I mean, I remember seeing... what Prakash does, and then I remember also communicating about another piece of tech, but I can't remember what it's called, and I remember talking to Prakash about it and saying, oh, I really like this, and that somebody had taken the WhatsApp kind of versatility and style and turned it into like an incident reporting app. Mm-hmm. So basically WhatsApp, but like controlled within an environment. So you have an incident, okay, everyone's got a phone, you have an incident, you open this app and you're like, you can either do voice note or text, you could type it in. So you could do a voice note, just had an incident, boss, this happened, that happened, da, da, da. I'm just going to send through some photos now. Ping, 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 photos go through. And it automatically, and I know Prakash does this now, I think, and a lot of his stuff is very similar. It takes the weather, it takes everything. And it was like, this is where it automatically does that. And then it was just so good. And it was like, right, just going to get a statement off the driver, hold the voice note button and just, yeah, so what happened, buddy? And it was just, I was just like, wow, how perfect is that as an example of a people-centered approach to incident reporting?
Well, you know what it does? It removes friction from a process. And let's face it, you know, we can be quite lazy as a species. But if we remove friction from something, people are more inclined to use it, I think.
Yeah.
So again, if you're making it easier to do something in language or a format that people are comfortable with, I do think you will get a better result.
Yeah,
I absolutely believe that.
Mm.
You know, but we've still got some way to go, I guess. But you know, if Alexa can keep reminding me that I need to buy some more sugar or something, and understand everything I'm doing when I'm walking around my kitchen, why can't we bring that into the workplace? Why can't we have an Alexa of safety that people can engage with whenever they want if they've got an issue?
Oh.
You know,
first, why not? You heard it first here. We want royalties on anyone who's intelligent enough to make that.
Have you got Bezos' number?
Yeah, yeah. Prakash, let's talk.
Yeah, let's do it.
You want to call it the Mac Leg Tech? We'll come up with a better name later.
Yeah, the format that people understand, or a language that they understand. Yeah. Or we can create our own language.
Yeah.
So why not? Who says we can't?
Yeah, I love it. Right, mate, we've been going for a while, so and you've got a job to do and I've got some work to do. So very, very quickly, I mean, is there anyone or anything you wanted to kind of do a shout out for or anything before we go?
No, I think I've probably mentioned people in this time that we've had.
Sure.
James, you know, I think there's some really talented people out there, whether it's the guys at Gincom or Prakash at safety.ai or guys at Field, or go on and on and on, but don't necessarily always look at the big companies. Mm. There's some very talented businesses, even like yourself with what you're doing now with your young business, good quality people with the right thinking who are thinking about doing something differently in language that most of our audiences understand. So if you're in a position like, fortunate to be in a position like me in a big organization, just stop for a minute and think about some of these organizations that are, you know, recreating the future. We just haven't seen it yet. And that, from that language point of view, I said, you talk about intent, understanding the audience, you know, it's framed by people's experiences. You're right. There is, I think there's one right answer, but try to make sure that whatever language you do use makes sense to the people that you're trying to communicate with.
Yeah. Well said, mate. Very well said.
Fabulous time. It's been great talking to you. Love the talk.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast, buddy. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, be good. Be safe. Can I do that? Am I going to get told off?
No,
I won't do it anymore.
First guest that's ever done it. If you actually went safe.
Well, yeah, I'm not gonna. I'll probably kick you before I punch you. I've got a bad shoulder.
Oh, you beat up. But yeah. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
No, it's good. Yeah, take care. Yeah.
Okay, peeps. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mr. Legg. I love talking to Mr. Legg. I love talking to most people that come on a podcast. So I did enjoy talking to Ben. I always enjoy talking to Ben. He's a nice guy. He's a down-to-earth guy. And if you ever get a chance to chat to him, do it. He's a really nice guy. He knows what he's talking about. He's just a good kind of practitioner. You know, he's one of those people that are just, they just do shit and just crack on doing shit. And I really like that. And really easy to talk to, really easy to chat about, and he's just doing shit. So go and check him out, connect with him on LinkedIn, great person to follow. And I hope you enjoyed that, hope you got something from it. Don't forget to go check out riskfluentlimited.com if you ever need any support with anything, even if you just want some quick advice, drop me a message. I'm always active on LinkedIn, make sure you can connect with us, all the socials below as well. And if you need anything, just email me, james@riskfluentlimited.com. otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.